Pittsburgh to Harrisburg, Erie to Selins Grove, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the Club for Growth Foundation has published its 2020 Pennsylvania State Legislative Scorecard. Andy Roth is here with details. Lee Tuttle is founder of 4Country, a program that connects special operations forces with members of the community. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Lee in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And the COVID-19 pandemic has taught us what does and what does not work in healthcare. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary on why now is the time for reform. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Andy Roth from the Club for Growth Foundation in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The announced retirement of U.S. Senator Pat Toomey is resulting in a large field of candidates to replace him in next year's election. The field for both parties got larger this past week. On the Republican side, Kathy Barnett, a conservative commentator, announced that she will seek her party's nomination. She joins Montgomery County businessman Jeff Bartos, attorney Sean Gale, and businessman Everett Stern in the race. A number of other Republicans are eyeing the contest. On the Democrat side, Montgomery County Commissioner Val Arcush and State Senator Sharif Street of Philadelphia both entered the race, joining Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, State Representative Malcolm Kenyatta, and former Norristown Borough Council President Joe McGuigan. Several other prominent Democrats also are considering seeking the nomination. On the legislative front, the Pennsylvania House of Representatives took action this past week to provide temporary, targeted protection from COVID-19 liability lawsuits for those businesses complying with government health and safety guidelines. Similar legislation passed last year, but was vetoed by Governor Tom Wolf. After making some changes, lawmakers hope to gain the governor's approval of the new bill, which is seen as a necessary step for businesses struggling to recover from the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. As candidates, promises are made. But did your state senator and state representative deliver once they got to Harrisburg? The Club for Growth Foundation has published its 2020 legislative scorecard, so now you can check up on your district's lawmakers. Andy Roth from the foundation is here with details. Andy, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Andy, before we get into the specific scores of individual legislators around the Commonwealth, tell us a bit about the Club for Growth Foundation's legislative scorecard. What is it meant to do, and what sort of methodology do you use?
Before we even started doing state scorecards, we kind of did an audit of all state scorecards across the country, and unfortunately, we had disappointing results. There are very few state scorecards. Some states have more than others, but for the most part, state lawmakers are not being held accountable by their voting records. So we thought that it was imperative that we start doing a scorecard in all 50 states. And we started this endeavor back in 2018 with a few states, and then we've slowly grown it. And just recently, we started doing Pennsylvania. And the way that these scorecards work is that we look at all of the floor votes that are cast in both chambers, the State House and State Senate, and we look at all economic issues. So taxes, spending, regulation, health care, all of those things that affect a taxpayer's pocketbook. And when we examine every floor vote, and that's final passage, it includes amendments, it includes even nominations sometimes in the Pennsylvania Senate, then we compile the ones that best represent all of the issues, and we put it together in a scorecard and see where the dust settles. And then we publish it for the public to see and to hold their lawmakers accountable. So it's a really good program. We think that it's desperately needed, and we just want to bring more accountability to the system.
the Club for Growth scorecard, tell our listeners a bit about what sort of issues you score, mainly economic, correct?
Yeah, so we want to focus on taxes, of course, because that's a pocketbook issue. There are a lot of taxes, different kinds of taxes. There are big ones like sales taxes and income taxes, but there's also much smaller ones like fees that people may not be aware of. Then obviously there's spending. There's always the big fight over the budget, and that is a big, big deal because it dramatically affects the size and scope of government. So all of these issues are important, and all of them are represented in our scorecard.
In terms of the Pennsylvania legislature, looking at the Republican caucuses in each chamber, Andy, Republicans, how good of a job have they been doing at restraining the growth of government overall, just as a general observation?
Well, it's interesting because you can measure that different ways, right? I would say that Pennsylvania has not done a very good job at restraining government, Republicans in general as well. The states where we have seen exemplary or maybe the least worst, I suppose, depending on how you want to grade it. I think Florida is an amazing legislature in the sense that given the size of their legislature, they get gavel in and they gavel out. They pass very few laws. They respect economic freedom, and they'll mess up from time to time, but they're very good. So does Arizona appear to be. So by comparison of those two states, Pennsylvania is not doing very well. If you just measure it in absolute terms, Republicans are only getting it right about half the time. The average score in the Pennsylvania House is 54%. The average Republican score in the Pennsylvania Senate is 58%. So that indicates to us that there are not a lot of supporters of economic freedom in the Pennsylvania legislature, and that's concerning. And just my own personal view on this, I think, is that a lot of these lawmakers just aren't educated. They're thrust into office for their own political aggrandizement, or they're actually trying to make a difference. But when they're confronted with all of these bills, they don't know the first thing about what these bills do or how they work. And the people that are telling them how those bills work are typically leadership and lobbyists. And those folks have an agenda that's probably not good for the taxpayer. So education is key here, is trying to help these lawmakers realize the damage they are creating when they expand government. So I believe that there's a lot of room for improvement in Pennsylvania. It's just unfortunate that they're not at a good starting point.
We are talking with Andy Roth, who is with the Club for Growth Foundation. They have put out their 2020 legislative scorecard. Andy, let's drill down a little bit. And even though, as you've mentioned, we only are sort of mediocre in terms of the voting record when it comes to economic issues here in Pennsylvania, let's talk about who did well, which representatives and senators did well, and which not so much so. So if we look at the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, who ended up at the top of the scorecard? Who came up with the best score?
Andrew Lewis from House District 105 got the best score, and he's kind of well known as one of the more conservative members of the legislature. He got a 90% score. And let me add that our sister organization, the Club for Growth, they review our scorecards, and they hand out awards for anybody who gets 90% on a year scorecard, but also a lifetime score. And Andrew Lewis got a 90% on the 2020 scorecard, but his lifetime score is only 71% because we also released the 2019 scorecard, in which he didn't do very well. But overall, 90% is very good, and he did a great job. After him, there are several who got 81%, folks like David Rowe, Frank Ryan, Daryl Metcalf, Kathy Rapp, a few others, they got 81. And then as you work your way down, folks like Don Kiefer got 69%, Russ Diamond got a 74%. And then it goes all the way down to the lowest performing Republican was Todd Stevens at just 34%. So there's a wide variance between how the Republicans perform between 34% and 90%, and that has led to the average Republican score of 54%.
Of course, Todd Stevens, a representative from Montgomery County, no surprise there, one of the most left-wing members, to the degree there are left-wing members in the Republican caucus. He, along with Tom Mahaffey, who also scored very low from Dauphin County. In terms of the Democrats, obviously, they're at the bottom of your scorecard, but which Democrat scored the best? I'm sure somebody did at least moderately well.
Yeah, Frank Burns from the 72nd District got a 61%, where, as we just mentioned, Todd Stevens, the lowest rated Republican, only got 34%. So Burns almost scored twice as high as a Democrat, and the lowest ranking Republican was 61%.
Interesting. Burns, of course, from southwestern Pennsylvania. Democrats in southwestern Pennsylvania, of course, tend to be more of the moderate, sometimes even really a conservative variety, as opposed to those from the more urban and suburban areas in the Philadelphia region. Let's switch over now, Andy, to the Pennsylvania State Senate. And taking a look at who came out at the top of the heap there, the names really aren't any surprise to anybody who keeps an eye on the Senate. So who were the champions?
Yeah, the top two scorers were Scott Hutchinson from the 21st District with an 83%, and he was tied for first with Doug Mastriano in the 33rd District. Both of them got the highest score at 83%.
Also, Kristen Phillips Hill from York County, I believe, near the top of the list.
Yeah, she came in at third place at 71%.
Now, interesting, if you look at the lowest ranking Republican, who was Tom Killian, what number did Tom come out with? It was pretty pathetic.
Yeah, so he got just 23%. And to put that in context, the average Democrat score was 24%. So he, by all intents and purposes, he is basically an average Democrat rather than the lowest-rated Republican. And let me make one point about that. When we think about Democrats and Republicans, we kind of immediately think of Congress, and we think of conservatives like Jim Jordan and the former Congressman Mark Meadows and some other rock stars within the conservative movement. And then when we think of Democrats, we think of AOC and the very progressive far left. And we think that there's this wide ocean between them. At the state level, you don't see that. There are a lot of Republicans that are Democrats, and there are a lot of Democrats that are Republicans. I shouldn't say a lot, but the line is much more blurry. So for the public to look at these scorecards, I would be careful to just automatically say all the Republicans got better scores and the Democrats got worse scores. There are a lot of Republicans with bad scores on this scorecard, and that's probably for political reasons, like you mentioned, geography.
We have been talking with Andy Roth from the Club for Growth Foundation about their Pennsylvania legislative scorecard. Andy, let's wrap up by having you tell our listeners a bit about the Club for Growth Foundation, and where can they go on the web to check out how their legislator fared?
The Club for Growth Foundation, our mission is to just educate the public about the virtues of economic freedom, limited government, and free markets. We do this at the state level with our state scorecards. We also have a fellowship program where we try to help conservative leaders engage with the public and advance the cause. Your listeners can go to clubforgrowthfoundation.org. And they can see all the scorecards and all the information, all the other information we have to offer.
Andy Roth from the Club for Growth Foundation. Andy, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Loman.
4Country is a nonprofit that brings together special operations military forces and the community over rounds of golf. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation talks with Lee Tuttle of 4Country about the program's many benefits. Joe?
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Lee, for being a guest in the Lincoln Radio program.
Thanks for having me. It's wonderful to chat with you today.
Lee, would you share with our listeners a little bit about the mission and overview of your organization?
I recently founded 4Country. We are a brand new organization, and we're still in the, I would say, the embryonic startup phase. But so far, we have had some really successful events. We are connecting patriotic civilians with members of our special operations forces for professional development and mentorship. And right now we are using the medium of golf, because what better way to get to know someone than a 5-hour walk of competition? And I think it really opens up the platform engagement when you are competing against someone you may not know very well. And it also is a great kind of quiet space. So often our operators are in high intense environments, and getting out with nature, I think, is a really, really great day for them as well.
Yeah. Anybody who plays the game of golf understands to what extent can you learn something about somebody else on around a golf. You can learn personality, temperament, sense of humor, if there is one. But it's a great game for that. It's a piece of the game that people should be more a part of. Now, this is set up so that you can connect as special operation forces, veterans or soldiers, warriors, with people in the community. How does that come together?
Our program, I have the background on the operators who would like to participate. And if they would like to learn about a certain industry, I then will match them up with a member of the community, or if we are out at a club, we will look for someone who is at a certain club who has experience in that industry. And from there, we do like a social lunch or cocktail hour, and then we have the round of golf, and then there's a follow-on keeping up that connection through, you know, phone calls and emails and professional mentorship.
Talk with the listeners a little bit about what are the stresses that are more intense with these operators than the average warrior.
The civilian-military divide is ever-widening, and 19 years of war has really, really accentuated that, and that is especially true within special operations community. Our guys are gone quite frequently. The op tempo is extremely high, and I think this was the first Thanksgiving I've had with my husband in, I think, 4 years. So they're not around as much as we sometimes imagine or see what like the life is like in Hollywood. It takes a toll. They come back and they don't really have sometimes time to refit or have a lot of time with their family, and they're gone again.
Yeah, when we're watching programs on television like SEAL Team and that, it doesn't really capture the stress and the tension and the worry that the family goes through.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it really doesn't. And I don't know if you've heard of the Blue Star Family Survey, but in 2019, they surveyed 11,000 active duty service members, military spouses, and veterans. And of those 11,000, only 8% feel that the general public understands their sacrifices, and 12% feel the general public is aware of the challenges that military service places on families. That to me says a lot, and I think just community engagement would maybe help people to better understand what the lifestyle is. But also with this lifestyle, there's so many good things, and it's such a wonderful community, and the people that you're surrounded with are the best patriotic Americans that our country has. And I really believe that having this community engagement would help to recruit for the service as well.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Lee Tuttle, who is the founder and executive director of an organization called Four Country. Lee, where do you operate out of these days?
We are located in Pinehurst, North Carolina, but special operations are all over the country. And so we have ambassadors currently in Fort Lewis, Washington, and as well as Monterey, California.
That's terrific. And how can these organizations be of assistance to spreading the mission and bringing people together? Would they have to go through some kind of a certification, or do you just connect with them?
I connect with them and, you know, have a conversation about who we are, what we do, you know, what special operations is. And from there, we kind of start the introductions with the operators.
Lee, you're married to an operator. What was your inspiration for starting this organization?
I really saw while we were in, had the opportunity to be in Monterey, and my husband was attending the Naval Postgraduate School. He was able to form some really great professional relationships with civilian leaders, and they would go golfing together for professional development. And I saw how that impacted him and what a difference it made. And then there's another piece, which is my husband and I had the opportunity to take a retreat with Operation Healing Forces, and we were able to meet a wonderful civilian leader, Joe Geiger, and I will never forget him asking over dinner, if there's something like, what do you want the American public to know about your lives? And that really made me think, you know, I probably had a silly answer, but one, that showed me that people do care. And then two is they want to know, and we want to know what your lives are like as well.
When I got to spend time at that retreat with the operators and their spouses, I just swelled with patriotism. It's just like I felt so honored to be part of that. And I wish that everybody would have an opportunity to have that kind of a sit down. And it looks like what you're doing is providing that opportunity. So how do people find out? You contact them, but if somebody wanted to know more about how to get involved, how can they find you? Like, I play golf, and you're in Pinehurst, and Pinehurst is like a mecca for golf.
It is.
So if somebody from Pennsylvania wanted to come to North Carolina to play golf with some of your operators, how would they go about doing that?
Absolutely. So you can find us at fourcountry.com. You can contact us through social media. And my number is on our website. You can call me directly, or you can email me directly at leetuttle@fourcountry.com.
So when they're looking up Four Country, it's four like in the golf, if F-O-R-E, country.com. This is Joe Geiger in the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Lee Tuttle. She's the founder and executive director of an organization called Four Country. That's F-O-R-E, country. And you can find her on the internet at www.fourcountry.com. Lee, thank you very much for being a guest on our program.
Thank you for having me, Joe.
A relaxing of many barriers to providing medical care during the COVID-19 pandemic should be made permanent. So says Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Last month, we talked about the need to offer an alternative to the public option, discussing the personal option, which is about giving you the choice and control you deserve, access to the medical professionals you trust at a price you can afford. The personal option could be advanced by Washington lawmakers taking several measures, including expanding health savings accounts, increasing availability of short-term plans, and direct primary care. Here in Pennsylvania, we have 254 individuals to influence on state priorities between the House, the Senate, and the governor. For multiple consecutive legislative sessions, PA has passed healthcare reforms to some degree through the legislative process, but has failed to get the transformational policies we've supported since the early 2010s passed through both chambers and signed into law. As we head into the second quarter of this 2021-2022 legislative session, the time is ripe to highlight those state healthcare reforms we'll be working to advance and finally get to the governor's desk for his signature. Each of these reforms individually, and certainly together, will serve to expand the supply of medical care to provide better healthcare for more Pennsylvanians at a lower cost. First, finally passing full practice authority for our Commonwealth's advanced practice registered nurse, certified nurse practitioners. This legislation has pended for over a decade now. For the first time, it received a vote in the House Professional Licensure Committee last session, but never received a full floor vote. Each year, the Senate passes this bill with nearly unanimous support. If passed, Senate Bill 25, sponsored by Senator Camara Bartolotta, would permit APRN CNPs to practice to the full extent of their education and training by removing the requirement for a formal collaborative agreement currently required of them, allowing them to treat more patients, including those in underserved areas, meeting the growing healthcare needs of Pennsylvanians from urban and rural populations alike. Passing full practice authority will ensure primary care needs are met by expanding access to these services through APRNs. We can also address title designation for PA certified registered nurse anesthetists by passing Senator Gordner's Senate Bill 416. This will allow these highly skilled healthcare professionals who have done some of the most critical work throughout the pandemic, manning ventilators for COVID-19 patients, to have recognition for the education, training, and experience they possess. Without statutory recognition, many CRNAs are choosing to leave PA for states where there are no barriers around credentialing. Second, we can and should empower healthcare providers to practice telehealth. Millions of Americans have benefited from receiving healthcare services at home without endangering their health and the health of providers and the health of other patients. Virus transmission has been the focus of the healthcare community and has been mitigated from small towns to large cities through the use of telehealth. The legislation will also provide clarity around insurance reimbursement. Last, Representative Chris Quinn has introduced the Retaining Healthcare Innovations Act. This legislation recognizes the crucial role the many regulatory waivers and administrative flexibilities have played throughout the pandemic. This legislation will provide clarity around when these waivers would expire, mitigating an abrupt and disruptive lapse. It would also direct the Joint State Government Committee to make recommendations regarding which waivers should remain permanently in place. The many federal and state licensing and regulatory waivers that provided flexibility to healthcare workers to efficiently respond to the pandemic worked. Legislation that would allow out-of-state registered nurses to practice in PA is another way to increase flexibility within the system that worked during the pandemic. Senator Lisa Boscola's Senate Bill 115 would authorize PA to join the Nurse Licensure Compact, providing the opportunity for reciprocity of license transfer between member states, permitting nurses to effortlessly move to states and practice where the demand for care is greatest. What we know is that our providers have served patients in the most trying of times and in the most valiant of ways. We have an obligation to finally pass reforms that will honor their work and best position PA patients to receive the best, most abundant, and affordable care possible. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity.
And we're looking forward to the 2021 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. After being virtual last year, an in-person conference will be held June 11th and 12th at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the premier gathering of conservative activists each year here in the Keystone State. This year's featured speakers will include Jesse Waters, host of Waters World on the Fox News Channel, Fox News contributor and former Congressman Jason Chaffetz, along with John Gizzi of Newsmax. Complete information and registration for the 2021 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference can be found at paleadershipconference.org. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.